All right, good morning. Welcome to Fellowship. It's Veterans Day, and thankful for anybody here a veteran. I'm thankful for all our veterans out there. My dad was a veteran. So, but anyway, we're going to go to 1 Kings chapter 17.
I sent Benson a Happy Veterans Day email.
Oh, that's good. I have a few friends that are veterans. Always thankful for people that serve and protect. I'm going to be reading from the message today in 1 Kings here. And actually, I had two other teachings prepared, and Diane and I, we were on Facebook, and there was some, I had posted something, and somebody had didn't like what I said, that I wasn't being a nice enough Christian. It might offend somebody with this thing I said. You know, it wasn't milk toast enough. It wasn't like soggy, wimpy. Oh, we gotta be nice. I was complaining about people stealing the election and fraudulent vote counting, and we need to stand against that because our vote is sacred. And when they, it's like Karl Marx said. Or was it Lenin, one of those communist guys? So it doesn't matter who votes. What matters is who counts the votes. They can make it come out any way they want.
Right.
And so this person was complaining, so I decided to change my whole teaching. And a lot of people think it's, to be Christian, you got to be real nice. We can't ever raise our voice. We can't say anything controversial. Got to be, walking eggshells all the time. No, men of God, in the Old and New Testament, were bold. Jesus Christ turned to Peter and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Oh, maybe Peter would have been offended and quit coming. There was a time Jesus was teaching, and he said some stuff, and a whole bunch of people said, "Well, we're not going to come anymore. I don't like hearing that stuff." And Jesus Christ said to his apostles, said, "Oh, I'm sorry, did I offend you?" No, he said, "You guys going to leave too?" He stood on the truth. You know, like Dr. Werwell used to say, we have no friends when it comes to the truth. And so let's go. This is a story here of a man of God, a prophet, Elijah. This guy had a backbone. He also had a pair, if you know what I'm talking about. He was a man's man. So chapter 17, verse 1, and this happened. Elijah the Tishbite from among the settlers of Gilead confronted Ahab. He went and talked to the king. Wait a minute. He's bad-mouthing the king right to his face. Kings don't like that. And especially this guy, Ahab, he was one of the worst kings. They had a lot of bad kings in the Old Testament. This was one of the worst ones they ever had. And he confronted him, and he said, "As surely as God lives, the God of Israel, before whom I stand in obedient servants, the next years are going to see a total drought." Now, this will be a little different than your King James that you're reading, but I'm reading the message here. "Not a drop of dew or rain, unless I say otherwise." Man, you got to really believe God to walk out. Because what if you said that and the next day it rained? But God gave him revelation. And see, when believers, there's an abundance of believers, and we're ruled by believers, the land is blessed. When people reject God and we're ruled by leaders that reject God, the land is cursed. And the curse here was no rain. Then God told Elijah, "Get out of here and fast. Head east. Hide out in the Kereth Ravine on the other side of the Jordan River, and you can drink fresh water from the brook, and I've ordered ravens to feed you." Now, a lot of people in the 20th and 21st century have like all these bug out plans. They have their guns, they have their little bag of beef jerky, and they have their toilet paper and all the, you know, their gasoline and all the things they need to buy. Well, his bug out plan was to go hang out by a brook and birds would bring him food. You really got to believe in God for this stuff to happen. But see, God's our sufficiency. Elijah obeyed God's orders, and he went and camped at the Kereth Canyon on the other side of the Jordan, and sure enough, ravens brought him his meals, both breakfast and supper, and he drank from the brook. Eventually, the brook dried up, verse 7 here, because of the drought, and then God spoke to him and said, get up and go to Zarephath. Zarephath? I don't know how, some of these words, I'm not sure. Well, that place over there in Sidon. And live there. I've instructed a woman who lives there, a widow, to feed you. So he got up and he went to Zarephath, and he came to the entrance of the village, and he met the woman gathering firewood. And he asked her, please, would you bring me a little water in a jug? I need a drink. And she went to get it, and he called out, while you're at it, would you bring me something to eat? And she said, I swear, as surely as your God lives, I guess she recognized that he was a prophet, I don't have as much as a biscuit. I have a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a bottle. You found me scratching together just enough firewood to make my last meal for my son and me. We will eat it and we'll die. Woe's me. Woe's me. It's just everything's so bad. The government's bad. The bad person got... At least in our day and time we have elections. They didn't have elections. You got a crooked king. He was in there for a long time. And so it was just... like I said before, when the crooked king rules, that everything is cursed. And Elijah said unto her, don't worry about a thing. Go ahead and do what you said. But first make a small biscuit for me and bring it back here. So what she did is she was tithing her first amount, her first fruits out of that, and then God blessed the rest. She gave the first amount of her food she had to the man of God. And then what was going to happen is here, it says, then go ahead and make a meal, what's left for you and your son. This is the word of the God of Israel. The jar of flour will not run out, and the bottle of oil will not empty before God sends rain on the land and ends this drought. And she went right off and did it, just as Elijah asked, and it turned out, as he said, daily, food for her family, the jar of meal didn't run out, and the bottle of oil wouldn't become empty. We need to get a thing like that, olive oil, Diane. We consume a lot of olive oil because it's really good for you. And there's things in there called polyphenols and other things that are really good for you. And we go through a lot of bottles, and they keep running out. We don't have this kind of thing. God's promise... If we needed it, it would be there. God's promise fulfilled to the letter exactly as Elijah had delivered it. And then I'm going to skip a little bit. There was what happened here in the latter part of this chapter is the woman's son died. And she said, well, you know, God, why did you send this curse to me? You know, I'm helping this man of God and you let my son die. She's getting all negative. And Elijah raised her son from the dead. Amazing miracle. You know, it's like people, it's amazing. People see miracles and then something else happens and they say, oh God, why'd you let this happen to me? Well, God takes care of us. He never says we won't have more troubles. He'll just say makes a way out when we have troubles. So let's go to chapter 18, verse 1. A long time passed. Then God's word came to Elijah. The drought was now in its third year. The message, go and present yourself to Ahab. I'm about to make it rain on the country. Elijah set out to present himself to Ahab. The drought in Samaria at that time was the most severe. Ahab called for Obadiah, who was in charge of the place. Obadiah feared God and was very devout. Earlier, when Jezebel tried to kill off the prophets of God, see, they're not only, that's the way that the other side works, the devil. Christians are usually pretty tolerant. You know, we don't care if you have a different religion than us, you know, as long as you don't mess with us and leave us alone. Well, when the enemy gets in charge, they not only put their system in place, they want to get rid of all the people that don't agree with their system. That's why socialism, you know, like Hitler and Stalin and all the, and Mao, and they have concentration camps and they kill people that disagree with them, and that's just the way they play. So I called you. Obadiah was very devout. Earlier, when Jezebel tried to kill off all the prophets of God, Obadiah had hidden away 100 of them in 2 caves, 50 in a cave. So he put 100 in this, or 50 in this cave, 50 in that cave, and then supplied them with food and water. And Ahab ordered Obadiah, go through the country and locate every spring and stream. Let's see if we can find enough grass to keep our horses and mules from dying. So they divided the country between them for the search, and Ahab went one way and Obadiah the other. And that's when Obadiah ran into Elijah here. And Obadiah went his way, and suddenly there he was, Elijah. Obadiah fell on his knees, bowing in reverence and exclaiming, "Is it really you, my master, Elijah?" "And yes," said Elijah, "it's the real me." "Now go tell your boss I've seen Elijah." And Obadiah said, "Whoa, wait a minute, what have I done to deserve this? Ahab will kill me. As surely as your God lives, there isn't a country or kingdom where my master hasn't sent out the search parties looking for you. And if they said we can't find him, we've looked high and low, he would make that country or kingdom swear they were not to be found." See, what would happen, they'd send out the search parties and they'd say, they'd have to make an official decree, he's not here. Then if it shows up he's there, then the king will say, okay, whoever made that decree and said he's not there, we're going to lop his head off. You know, that's the way those crooked kings work. "Now you're telling me, go and tell your master Elijah's found. The minute I leave you, the Spirit of God will whisk you away to who knows where, and then when I report to Ahab, you'll have disappeared and Ahab will kill me. And I've served God devoutly since I was a boy. Hasn't anyone told you what I did when Jezebel was out to kill the prophets of God, how I risked my life by hiding 100 of them, 50 to a cave, and made sure they got food and got water? Now you're telling me to draw attention to myself by announcing to my master Elijah's been found. Why, he'll kill me for sure." All right, verse 15 we're at now. "Elijah said, surely is God, the God of the angel armies lives before whom I take my stand. I'll meet your master face to face this very day." So Obadiah went straight to Ahab and told him, and Ahab went out to meet Elijah. And the moment Ahab saw Elijah, he said, "So it's you, you old troublemaker." Elijah said, "It's not I who caused the trouble in Israel, but you and your government. You've dumped God's ways and commands and run off after the local gods, the Baals. And here's what I want to do to you. Assemble everyone. Or here's what I want you to do, I'm sorry. Read what's written. Assemble everyone in Israel at Mount Carmel and make sure the special pets of Jezebel, the 450 prophets of the local gods, the Baals, and the 400 prophets of the whore goddess Asherah are there. See, Elijah, he's not pulling any punches. He's basically telling Ahab, you know, your government's crooked. Your gods you're following are false. I'm following the one true God. See, that's the way we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be bold like that. We're not wimpy like, oh, it's we. I know we have to be tolerant. See, the other side's not tolerant us. They want us to die. They don't want us to have freedom. They want to get rid of us. See, they want to get rid of all the Christians in this country and replace us with a bunch of third world refugees. If they had their way, they would do that. Verse 20. So Ahab summoned everyone in Israel, particularly with the prophets, to Mount Carmel. And Elijah challenged the people, how long are you going to sit on the fence? If God is the real God, follow him. If it's Baal, follow him. Make up your minds. Nobody said a word, and nobody made a move. Then Elijah said, I'm the only prophet of God left in Israel. There are 450 prophets of Baal. Let the Baal prophets bring up two oxen, and let them pick one and butcher it and lay it out on the altar on firewood, but don't ignite it. I'll take the other ox and cut it up and lay it out on the wood, but neither will I light the fire. Then you pray to your gods, and I'll pray to the God who answers will prove, the God who answers with fire will prove to be, in fact, God. And all the people said, agreed, a good plan, do it. And Elijah told the Baal prophets, choose your ox and prepare it and go first. You're the majority, then pray to your God, but don't light the fire. So they took the ox that was given them, prepared it for the altar, then prayed to Baal, and they prayed all the morning long. Oh, Baal, answer us! But nothing happened. So not so much as a whisper or a breeze. Desperate, they jumped and they stomped on the altar that they had made. By noon, Elijah started making fun of them, taunting, call a little louder. He's a god, after all. Maybe he's off meditating somewhere or other. Or maybe he's gotten involved in another project. Oh, I know, maybe he's on vacation. You don't suppose he overslept and he needs to be woken up. They prayed louder and louder, cutting themselves with swords and knives, a ritual common to them, until they were covered with their own blood. This went on until well past noon. They used every religious trick and strategy they knew to make something happen on the altar, but nothing happened. Not so much as a whisper or flicker of response. See, Elijah wasn't being nice to him. He was being very rude. Oh, but wait a minute. Christians can't be rude. Men of God can't be. He was being downright heavy sarcasm here. Your God is worthless. You know, what's going on here? There's no miracle. So verse 30. Then Elijah told the people, enough of that. It's my turn. Gather around, and they gathered, and he put the altar back together, for by now it was in ruins. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes of Jacob, the same Jacob to whom God said, from now on your name is Israel. He built the stones into an altar to honor God. Then Elijah dug a fairly wide trench around the altar. He laid the firewood on the altar, cut up the ox, put it on the wood, and he said, fill four buckets with water and drench the ox and the firewood. Then he said, do it again, and they did it. Then he said, do it a third time, and they did it a third time, and the altar was drenched, and the trench was filled with water.